Say hi to Marion for me, and don't you be late for dinner.
Good old Amma. She always had all the answers, whether she knew it or not, and whether or not she would willingly give them up. Lena was waiting for me at the parking lot of the Gatlin County Library. The cracked concrete was still wet and shiny from the rain. Even though the library was still open for 2 more hours, the hearse was the only car in the lot, except for a familiar old turquoise truck. Let's just say this wasn't a big library town. There wasn't much we wanted to know about any town but our own, and if your granddaddy or your great-granddaddy couldn't tell you, chances were you didn't need to know. Lena was huddled against the side of the building, writing in her notebook. She was wearing tattered jeans, enormous rain boots, and a soft black t-shirt. Tiny braids hung down around her face, lost in all the curls. She looked almost like a regular girl. I wasn't sure I wanted her to be a regular girl. I was sure I wanted to kiss her again, but it would have to wait. If Marion had the answers we needed, I'd have a lot more chances to kiss her. I ran through my playbook again. Pick and roll. You really think there's something here that can help us? Lena looked over her notebook at me. I pulled her up with my hand. Not something, someone. The library itself was beautiful. I had spent so many hours in it as a kid, I'd inherited my mother's belief that a library was sort of a temple. This particular library was one of the few buildings that had survived Sherman's March and the Great Burning. The library and the Historical Society were the two oldest buildings in town, aside from Ravenwood. It was a two-story venerable Victorian, old and weathered with peeling white paint and decades worth of vines sleeping along the doors and windows. It smelled like aging wood and creosote, plastic book covers and old paper. Old paper, which my mom used to say was the smell of time itself. I don't get it. Why the library? It's not just the library, it's Marion Ashcroft. The librarian? Uncle Macon's friend? Marion was my mom's best friend, and her research partner. She's the only other person who knows as much about Gatlin County as my mom, and she's the smartest person in Gatlin now. Lena looked at me, skeptically. Smarter than Uncle Macon? Okay, she's the smartest mortal in Gatlin. I could never quite figure out what someone like Marion was doing in a town like Gatlin.
Just because you live in the middle of nowhere, Marion would tell me over a tuna sandwich with my mom, doesn't mean you can't know where you live.
I had no idea what she meant. I had no idea what she was talking about half the time. That's probably why Marion had gotten along so well with my mom. I didn't know what my mom was talking about either, the other half the time. Like I said, the biggest brain in town, or maybe just the biggest character. When we walked into the empty library, Marion was wandering around the stacks in her stockings, wailing to herself like a crazy person from a Greek tragedy, which she was prone to reciting. Since the library was pretty much a ghost town, except for the occasional visit from one of the ladies from the DAR checking on questionable genealogy, Marion had free run of the place.
Knowest thou aught?
I followed her voice deep into the stacks.
Hast thou heard?
I rounded the corner into fiction. There she was, swaying, holding a pile of books in her arms, looking right through me.
Or is it hidden from thee?
Lena stepped up behind me.
That our friends are threatened.
Marion looked from me to Lena over her square red reading glasses.
With the doom of our foes.
Marion was there, but not there. I knew that look well, and I knew, though she had a quote for everything, she didn't choose them lightly. What doom of my foes threatened me or my friends? If that friend was Lena, I wasn't sure I wanted to know. I read a lot, but not Greek tragedy.
Oedipus?
I hugged Marion over her pile of books. She hugged me so tightly I couldn't breathe, an unwieldy biography of General Sherman cutting into my ribs. "Antigone," Lena spoke up from behind me.
"Show off." "Very good," Marion smiled over my shoulder.
I made a face at Lena, who shrugged. "Homeschool."
"It's always impressive to meet a young person who knows Antigone.
All I remember is she just wanted to bury the dead." Marion smiled at both of us. She shoved half her pile of books into my arms and half into Lena's. When she smiled, she looked like she could have been on the cover of a magazine. She had white teeth and beautiful brown skin, and she looked more like a model than a librarian. She was that pretty and exotic-looking. A mix of so many bloodlines, it was like looking at the history of the South itself. People from the West Indies, the Sugar Islands, England, Scotland, even America, all intermingling until it would take a whole forest of family trees to chart the course. Even though we were south of somewhere and north of nowhere, as Amma would say, Marion Ashcroft was dressed like she could have been teaching one of her classes at Duke. All of her clothes, all of her jewelry, all of her signature brightly patterned scarves seemed to come from somewhere else and complement her unintentionally cool, cropped haircut. Marion was no more Gatlin County than Lena, and yet she'd been here as long as my mom had. Now longer.
"I've missed you so much, Ethan. And you must be Macon's niece, Lena.
The infamous new girl in town. The girl with the window." "Oh yes, I've heard about you. The ladies, they are talking."
We followed Marion back to the front counter and dumped the books on the restacking cart.
"Don't believe everything you hear, Dr. Ashcroft." "Please, Marion."
I nearly dropped a book. Aside from my family, Marion was Dr. Ashcroft to nearly everyone around here. Lena was being offered instant access to the inner circle, and I had no idea why.
"Marion," Lena grinned.
Aside from Link and me, this was Lena's first taste of our famed southern hospitality, and from another outsider.
"The only thing I want to know is, when you broke that window with your broomstick, did you take out the future generation of the D.A.R.?"
Marion began to lower the blinds, motioning for us to help.
"Of course not. If I did that, where would I get all this free publicity?"
Marion threw back her head and laughed, putting her arm around Lena.
"A good sense of humor, Lena. That's what you need to get around in this town."
Lena sighed. "I've heard a lot of jokes, mostly about me."
"Ah, but the monuments of wit survive the monuments of power."
"Is that Shakespeare?"
I was feeling a little left behind.
"Close, Sir Francis Bacon. Though if you're one of the people who think he wrote Shakespeare's plays, I suppose you were right the first time."
"I give up."
Marion ruffled my hair.
"You've grown about a foot and a half since I've last seen you, E.W. What is Amma feeding you these days? Pie for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? I feel like I haven't seen you in 100 years.
I looked at her.
"I know, I'm sorry. I just didn't feel much like reading."
She knew I was lying, but she knew what I meant. Marion went to the door and flipped the open sign to closed. She turned the bolt with a sharp click. It reminded me of the study.
"I thought the library was open till 9.
If it wasn't, I would lose a valuable excuse for sneaking out to Lena's.
"Not today. The head librarian has just declared today a Gatlin County library holiday. She's rather spontaneous that way," she winked, "for a librarian."
"Thanks, Aunt Marion.
I know you wouldn't be here if you didn't have a reason, and I suspect Macon Ravenwood's niece is, if nothing else, a reason.
So why don't we all go into the back room, make a pot of tea, and try to be reasonable. Marion loved a good pun. It's more like a question, really. I felt in my pocket where the locket was still wrapped in Sulla the Prophet's handkerchief. Question everything, learn something, answer nothing. Homer? Euripides. You better start coming up with a few of these answers, E.W., or I'm going to actually have to go to one of those school board meetings. But you just said to answer nothing. She unlocked a door marked Private Archive. Did I say that? Like Amma, Marion always seemed to have the answer. Like any good librarian. Like my mom. I'd never been in Marion's private archive, the back room. Come to think of it, I didn't know anyone who had ever been back there, except for my mom. It was the space they shared, the place they wrote and researched, and who knows what else. Not even my dad was allowed in. I can remember Marion stopping him in the doorway when my mother was examining a historical document inside. Private means private. It's a library, Marion. Libraries were created to democratize knowledge and make it public. Around here, libraries were created so that Alcoholics Anonymous would have somewhere to meet when the Baptists kicked them out. Marion, don't be ridiculous. It's just an archive. Don't think of me as a librarian. Think of me as a mad scientist. This is my secret laboratory. You're crazy. You two are just looking at some crumbling old papers. If you reveal your secrets to the wind, you should not blame the wind for revealing them to the trees. Khalil Gibran, he fired back. Three can keep a secret if two of them are dead. Benjamin Franklin. Eventually, even my father had given up trying to get into their archive. We'd gone home and eaten Rocky Road ice cream, and after that, I had always thought of my mother and Marion as an unstoppable force of nature. Two mad scientists, as Marion had said, chained to each other in the lab. They had churned out book after book, even once making the shortlist for the Voice of the South Award, the Southern equivalent of a Pulitzer Prize. My dad was fiercely proud of my mom, of both of them, even if we were just along for the ride. Lively of the mind. That's how he used to describe my mom, especially when she was in the middle of a project. That was when she was the most absent. And yet, somehow, when he seemed to love her best. And now, here I was, in the private archive, without my dad or my mom, or even a bowl of Rocky Road ice cream in sight. Things were changing pretty quickly around here, for a town that never changed at all. The room was paneled and dark, the most secluded, airless, windowless room of the third oldest building in Gatlin. Four long oak tables stood in parallel lines down the center of the room. Every inch of every wall was crammed with books. Civil War artillery and munitions, King Cotton, white gold of the South. Flat metal shelving drawers held manuscripts, and overflowing file cabinets lined a smaller room attached to the back of the archive. Marion busied herself with her teapot and hot plate. Lena walked up to a wall of framed maps of Gatlin County, crumbling behind glass, old as the sisters themselves. Look, Ravenwood. Lena moved her finger across the glass. And there's Greenbrier. You can see the property line a lot better on this map. I walked to the far corner of the room, where a lone table stood, covered with a fine layer of dust and the occasional cobweb. An old historical society charter lay open, with circled names, a pencil still stuck in the spine. A map made out of tracing paper, tacked to a map of modern-day Gatlin, seemed like someone was trying to mentally excavate the old town from beneath the new. And lying on top of all of it was a photo of the painting in Macon Ravenwood's entry. The woman with the locket. Genevieve. It has to be Genevieve, We have to tell her, El. We have to ask. We can't. We can't trust anyone. We don't even know why we're seeing the visions. Lena, trust me.
What's all this stuff over here, Aunt Marion? She looked at me, her face briefly clouding over.
That's our last project, your mom's and mine. Why did my mom have a picture of the painting at Ravenwood? I don't know.
Lena walked over to the table and picked up the photo of the painting.
Marion, what were you guys doing with this painting?
Marion handed each of us a proper cup of tea with a saucer. That was another thing about Gatlin. You used a saucer at all times, no matter what.
You should recognize that painting, Lena. It belongs to your Uncle Macon. In fact, he sent me that photo himself.
But who's the woman?
Genevieve Duquesne, but I expect you know that.
I didn't, actually.
Hasn't your uncle taught you anything about your genealogy?
We don't talk much about my dead relatives. No one wants to bring up my parents. Marion walked over to one of the flat archival drawers, searching for something.
Genevieve Duquesne was your great-great-great-great-grandmother. She was an interesting character, really. Lila and I were tracing the entire Duquesne family tree for a project your Uncle Macon had been helping us with, right up until, she looked down, last year.
My mom had known Macon Ravenwood? I thought he had said he only knew her through her work.
You really should know your genealogy.
Marion turned a few yellowed pages of parchment. Lena's family tree stared back at us, right next to Macon's. I pointed to Lena's family tree.
That's weird. All the girls in your family have the last name Duquesne, even the ones who were married.
It's just a thing in my family. The women keep the family name even after they're married. It's always been that way.
Marion turned the page and looked at Lena.
It's often the case in bloodlines where the women are considered particularly powerful.
I wanted to change the subject. I didn't want to dig too deep into the powerful women in Lena's family with Marion, especially considering Lena was definitely one of them.
Why were you and Mom tracing the Duquesne tree? What was the project?
Marion stirred her tea.
Sugar?
She looked away as I spooned it into my cup.
We were actually mostly interested in this locket.
She pointed to another photograph of Genevieve. In this one, she was wearing the locket.
One story in particular. It was a simple story, really. A love story.
She smiled sadly.
Your mother was a great romantic, Ethan.
I locked eyes with Lena. We both knew what Marion was about to say.
Interestingly enough for you two, this love story involves both a Waite and a Duquesne, a Confederate soldier, and a beautiful mistress of Greenbrier.
The locket visions. The burning of Greenbrier. My mom's last book was about everything we had seen happen between Genevieve and Ethan, Lena's great-great-great-great-grandmother and my great-great-great-great-uncle. My mom was working on that book when she died. My head was reeling. Gatlin was like that. Nothing here ever happened only once.
Lena looked pale. She leaned over and touched my hand where it rested on the dusty table. Instantly, I felt the familiar prick of electricity.
Here, this is the letter that got us started on the whole project.
Marion lay out two parchment sheets on the next oak table. Secretly, I was glad she didn't disturb my mom's work table. I thought of it as a fitting memorial, more like her than the carnations everyone had laid on her casket. Even the D.A.R., they were there for the funeral, laying those carnations down like crazy, though my mom would have hated it. The whole town, the Baptists, the Methodists, even the Pentecostals, turned out for a death, a birth, or a wedding.
You can read it, just don't touch it. It's one of the oldest things in Gatlin. Lena bent over the letter, holding her hair back to keep it from brushing the old parchment. They're desperately in love, but they're too different. She scanned the letter. A species apart, he calls them. Her family is trying to keep them apart, and he's gone to enlist, even though he doesn't believe in the war, in the hope that fighting for the South will win him the approval of her family. Marion closed her eyes, reciting, I might as well be a monkey as a man, for all the good it does me at Greenbrier. Though merely mortal, my heart breaks with such pain at the thought of spending the rest of my life without you, Genevieve. It was like poetry, like something I imagined Lena would write. Marion opened her eyes again. As if he were Atlas, carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders. It's all so sad, said Lena, looking at me. They were in love. There was a war, I hate to tell you, but it ends badly, or so it seems. Marion finished her tea. What about this locket? I pointed at the photo, almost afraid to ask. Supposedly, Ethan gave it to Genevieve. As a troth of secret engagement. We'll never know what happened to it. Nobody ever saw it again after the night Ethan died. Genevieve's father forced her to marry someone else, but legend has it, she kept the locket and it was buried with her. It was said to be a powerful talisman, the broken bond of a broken heart. I shivered. The powerful talisman wasn't buried with Genevieve. It was in my pocket, and a dark talisman, according to Macon and Amma. I could feel it throbbing, as if it had been baking in hot coals. Ethan, don't. We have to. She can help us. My mom would have helped us. I shoved one hand in my pocket, pushing past the handkerchief to touch the battered cameo, and took Marion's hand. Hoping this was one of those times the locket would work. Her cup of tea crashed to the floor. The room started to swirl. Ethan! Marion shouted. Lena took Marion's hand. The light in the room was dissolving into night. Don't worry, we'll be with you the whole time. Lena's voice sounded far away, and I heard the sound of distant gunfire. In moments, the library filled with rain. The rain battered down upon them. The winds kicked up, beginning to quell the flames, even though it was too late. Genevieve stared at what was left of the great house. She had lost everything today. Mama, Evangeline. She couldn't lose Ethan, too. Ivy ran through the mud toward her, using her skirt to carry the things Genevieve had asked for.
I'm too late. Lord in heaven, I'm too late,
Ivy cried. She looked around nervously. Come, Miss Genevieve.
There's nothing more we can do here.
But Ivy was wrong. There was one thing.
It's not too late. It's not too late.
Genevieve kept repeating the words.
You're talking crazy, child.
She looked at Ivy, desperate.
I need the book.
Ivy backed away, shaking her head.
No. You can't mess with that book. You don't know what you're doing.
Genevieve grabbed the old woman by the shoulders.
Ivy, it's the only way. You have to give it to me. You don't know what you're asking. You don't know nothing about that book. Give it to me or I'll find it myself.
Black smoke was billowing up behind them, the fire still spitting as it swallowed up what was left of the house. Ivy relented. Picking up her tattered skirts and leading Genevieve out past what used to be her mother's lemon grove. Genevieve had never been past that point. There was nothing out there but cotton fields, or at least that's what she had always been told. And she had never had a reason to be in those fields, except on the rare occasions when she and Evangeline played a game of hide-and-seek. But Ivy's path was purposeful. She knew exactly where she was going. In the distance, Genevieve could still hear the sound of gunshots and the piercing cries of her neighbors as they watched their own homes burn. Ivy stopped near a bramble of wild vines, rosemary and jasmine, snaking their way up the side of an old stone wall. There was a small archway hidden beneath the overgrowth. Ivy ducked down and walked under the arch. Genevieve followed. The arch must have been attached to a wall because the area was enclosed, a perfect circle, its walls obscured by years of wild vines.
What is this place?
A place your mama didn't want you to know nothing about, or you'd know what it was.
In the distance, Genevieve could see tiny stones jutting from the tall grass. Of course, the family cemetery. Genevieve remembered being out there once when she was very young, when her great-grandmother had died. She remembered the funeral was at night, and her mother had stood in the tall grass in the moonlight, whispering words in a language Genevieve and her sister hadn't recognized.
What are we doing out here? You said you wanted that book, didn't you? It's out here?
Ivy stopped and looked at Genevieve, confused.
Where else would it be?
Farther back, there was another structure being strangled by wild vines. A crypt. Ivy stopped at the door.
You sure you want to...
We don't have time for this. Genevieve reached for the handle, but there wasn't one.
How does it open?
The old woman stood on her toes, reaching high above the door. There, illuminated by the distant light of the fires, Genevieve could see a small piece of smooth stone above the door, with a crescent moon carved into it. Ivy put her hand over the small moon and pushed. The stone door began to move, opening with the sound of stone scraping stone. Ivy reached for something on the other side of the doorway, a candle. The candlelight illuminated the small room. It couldn't have been bigger than a few feet wide all around, but there were old wooden shelves on every side, piled high with tiny vials and bottles, filled with plant blossoms, powders, and murky liquids. In the center of the room, there was a weathered stone table with an old wooden box lying on it. The box was modest by any standard, the only adornment a tiny crescent moon carved on its lid. The same carving from the stone above the door.
I'm not touching it,
Ivy said quietly, as if she thought the box itself could hear her.
Ivy, it's just a book.
No such thing as just a book, especially in your family.
Genevieve lifted the lid gently. The book's jacket was cracked black leather, now more gray than black. There was no title, just the same crescent moon embossed on the front. Genevieve lifted the book tentatively from the box. She knew Ivy was superstitious. Although she had mocked the old woman, she also knew that Ivy was wise. She read cards and tea leaves, and Genevieve's mother consulted Ivy and her tea leaves for almost everything. The best day to plant her vegetables to avoid a freeze, the right herbs to cure a cold. The book was warm, as if it were alive, breathing.
Why doesn't it have a name?
Genevieve asked.
Just 'cause a book don't have a title don't mean it don't have a name. That right there is the Book of Moons.
There was no more time to lose. She followed the flames through the darkness, back to what was left of Greenbrier and Ethan. She flipped through the pages. There were hundreds of casts. How would she find the right one? Then she saw it. It was in Latin, a language she knew well. Her mother had brought a special tutor in from up north to make sure she and Evangeline learned it. The most important language as far as her family was concerned. The binding spell. To bind death to life. Genevieve rested the book on the ground next to Ethan, her finger under the first verse of the incantation. Ivy grabbed her wrist and held it tight.
This isn't any night for this.
Half moons for working white magic, full moons for working black. No moon is something else altogether.
Genevieve jerked her arm from the old woman's grip.
I don't have a choice. This is the only night we have.
Miss Genevieve, you need to understand. Those words are more than a cast. They're a bargain. You can't use the Book of Moons without giving something in return.
I don't care about the price. We're talking about Ethan's life. I've lost everyone else.
That boy don't have no more life. It's been shot right out of him. What you trying to do is unnatural. And there can't be no right in that.
Genevieve knew Ivy was right. Her mother had warned her and Evangeline often enough about respecting the natural laws. She was crossing a line none of the casters in her family would ever have dared. But they were all gone now. She was the only one left. And she had to try.
No!
Lena let go of our hands, breaking the circle.
She went dark. Don't you get it? Genevieve, she was using dark magic.
I grabbed her hands. She tried to pull away from me. Usually all I could feel from Lena was a sunny sort of warmth. But this time she felt more like a tornado.
Lena, she's not you. He's not me. This all happened more than 100 years ago.
She was hysterical.
She is me. That's why the locket wants me to see this. It's warning me to stay away from you, so I don't hurt you after I go dark.
Marion opened her eyes, which were bigger than I'd ever seen them. Her short hair, normally neat and perfectly in place, was wild and windblown. She looked exhausted but exhilarated. I knew that look. It was like my mom was haunting her, especially around the eyes.
You are not claimed, Lena. You're neither good nor bad. This is just what it feels like to be 15 and a half in the Duquesne family. I've known a lot of casters in my day, and a whole lot of Duquesnes, both dark and light.
Lena looked at Marion, stunned. Marion tried to catch her breath.
You are not going dark. You're as melodramatic as Macon, now calm down.
How did she know about Lena's birthday? How did she know about casters?
You two have Genevieve's locket. Why didn't you tell me?
We don't know what to do. Everyone tells us something different.
Let me see it.
I reached into my pocket. Lena put her hand on my arm and I hesitated. Marion was my mom's closest friend, and she was like family. I knew I shouldn't question her motives, but then I had just followed Amma into the swamp to meet Macon Ravenwood, and I would never have seen that coming.
How do we know we can trust you?
I asked, feeling sick even asking the question.
The best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them.
Elton John?
Close. Ernest Hemingway. In his own way, sort of the rock star of his time.
I smiled, but Lena was not so willing to have her doubts charmed away.
Why should we trust you? When everyone else has been hiding things from us.
Marion grew serious.
Precisely because I'm not Amma, and I'm not Uncle Macon. I'm not your grandma or your Aunt Delphine. I'm mortal. I'm neutral. Between black magic and white magic, light and dark, there has to be something in between. Something to resist the pull. And that something is me.
Lena backed away from her. It was inconceivable to both of us.
How did Marion know so much about Lena's family? What are you?
In Lena's family, that was a loaded question.
I'm the Gatlin County head librarian, same as I've been since I moved here, same as I always will be. I'm not a caster, I just keep the records. I just keep the books.
Marion smoothed her hair.
I'm the keeper, just one in a long line of mortals entrusted with the history and the secrets of a world we can never entirely be a part of. There must always be one, and now that one is me.
Aunt Marion, what are you talking about? I was lost.
Let's just say there are libraries. And then there are libraries. I serve all the good citizens of Gatlin, whether they are casters or mortals. Which works out just fine, since the other branch is more of a night job, really.
You mean the Gatlin County Caster Library? I am, of course, the caster librarian, the head. Castor, librarian. I stared at Marion as if I was seeing her for the first time. She looked back at me with the same brown eyes, the same knowing smile. She looked the same, but somehow she was completely different. I had always wondered why Marion stayed in Gatlin all these years. I thought it was because of my mom. Now I realized there was another reason. I didn't know what I was feeling, but whatever it was, Lena was feeling the opposite. "Then you can help us. We have to find out what happened to Ethan and Genevieve, and what it has to do with Ethan and me, and we have to find out before my birthday." Lena looked at her expectantly. "The Castor Library must have records. Maybe the Book of Moons is there. Do you think it could have the answers?" Marion looked away. "Maybe. Maybe not. I'm afraid I can't help you. I'm so sorry." "What are you talking about?" She wasn't making sense. I'd never seen Marion refuse help to anyone, especially me. "I can't get involved, even if I want to. It's part of the job description. I don't write the books or the rules. I just keep them. I can't interfere." "Is this job more important than helping us?" I stepped in front of her, so she had to look me in the eye when she answered. "More important than me?" "It's not that simple, Ethan. There's a balance between the mortal world and the Castor world, between light and dark. The Keeper is part of that balance, part of the order of things. If I defy the laws by which I'm bound, that balance is jeopardized." She looked back at me, her voice shaky. "I can't interfere, even if it kills me, even if it hurts the people I love." I didn't understand what she was talking about, but I knew Marion loved me, like she had loved my mom. If she couldn't help us, there had to be a reason. "Fine, you can't help us. Just take me to this Castor Library and I'll figure it out myself."
"You're not a Castor, Ethan. This isn't your decision to make."
Lena stepped next to me and took my hand. "It's mine, and I want to go." Marion nodded. "All right, I'll take you. The next time it's open. The Castor Library doesn't operate on the same schedule as the Gatlin County Library. It's a bit more irregular." Of course it was. October 31st. Halloween. The only days of the year that the Gatlin County Library was closed were bank holidays, like Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, New Year's Day, Easter. As a result, these were the only days the Gatlin County Castor Library was open, which apparently wasn't something Marion could control. "Take it up with the county. Like I said, I don't make the rules." I wondered what county she was talking about, the one I had lived in my whole life, or the one that had been hidden from me for just as long. Still, Lena seemed almost hopeful. For the first time, it was as if she actually believed there might be a way to prevent what she had considered the inevitable. Marion couldn't give us any answers, but she anchored us in the absence of the two people we relied on most, who hadn't gone anywhere but seemed far away just the same. I didn't say anything to Lena, but without Amma, I was lost, and without Macon, I knew Lena couldn't even find her way to Lost. Marion did give us something, Ethan and Genevieve's letters, so old and delicate they were almost transparent, and everything she and my mother had collected about the two of them. A whole stack of papers in a dusty brown box with cardboard printed to look like wood paneling on the sides. Although Lena loved poring over the prose, "The days without you bleed together until time is nothing more than another obstacle we must overcome." All it seemed to amount to was a love story with a really bad and really black ending. But it was all we had. Now all we had to do was figure out what we were looking for. The needle in the haystack, or in this case, the cardboard box. So we did the only thing we could do. We started looking. After 2 weeks, I'd spent more time with Lena on the locket papers than I would have thought possible. The more we read through the papers, the more it seemed like we were reading about ourselves. At night, we stayed up late trying to solve the mystery of Ethan and Genevieve, a mortal and a caster, desperate to find a way to be together against impossible odds. At school, we faced some steep odds ourselves, just getting through another 8 hours at Jackson, and it was only getting harder. Every day there was another scheme to drive Lena away, or us apart, especially if that day was Halloween. Halloween was generally a pretty loaded holiday at Jackson. For a guy, anything involving costumes was an accident waiting to happen. And then there was always the stress of whether or not you made the guest list to Savannah Snow's annual blowout. But Halloween took on a whole new level of stress when the girl you were crazy about was a caster. I had no idea what to expect when Lena picked me up for school, a couple of blocks from my house, safely around the corner from the eyes in the back of Amma's head. "You're not dressed up," I said, surprised. "What are you talking about?" "I thought you'd be wearing a costume or something." I knew I sounded like an idiot the second the words came out of my mouth. "Oh, you think casters dress up on Halloween and fly around on brooms?" She laughed. "I didn't mean, sorry to disappoint you. We just dress for dinner like we do on any other holiday." "So it's a holiday for you guys, too." "It's the most sacred night of the year, and the most dangerous. The most important of the four high holidays. It's our version of New Year's Eve, the end of the old year and the beginning of the new." "What do you mean by dangerous?" "My grandma says it's the night when the veil between this world and the other world, the world of spirits, is the thinnest. It's a night of power and a night of remembrance."
"The other world? Is that like the afterlife?"
"Sort of. It's the realm of spirits."
"So Halloween really is all about spirits and ghosts."
She rolled her eyes. "We remember the casters who were persecuted for their differences, men and women who were burned for using their gifts."
"Are you talking about the Salem witch trials?"
"I guess that's what you call them. There were witch trials all along the eastern seaboard, not just in Salem, all over the world even. The Salem witch trials are just the ones your textbooks mention." She said "your" like it was a dirty word, and today, of all days, maybe it was. We drove past the Stop and Steal. Boo was sitting by the stop sign at the corner, waiting. He saw the hearse and loped slowly after the car.
"We should just give that dog a ride already. He must be tired following you around day and night."
Lena glanced in her rearview mirror. He'd never get in. I knew she was right, but as I turned back to look at him, I could have sworn he nodded. I spotted Link in the parking lot. He was wearing a blonde wig and a blue sweater with a Wildcats patch sewn on it. He was even carrying pom-poms. He looked scary and sort of like his mom, actually. The basketball team had decided to dress up like Jackson cheerleaders this year. With everything else that had been going on, it had slipped my mind. At least, that's what I told myself. I was going to get a lot of crap for this, and Earl was just waiting for a reason to jump all over me. Since I had started hanging out with Lena, I had developed a hot hand on the court. Now I was starting center instead of Earl, who was not too happy about it. Lena swore there was nothing magic about it, at least not caster magic. She came to one game, and I made every shot. The drawback was she was in my head throughout the game, asking me 1,000 questions about foul shots and assists and the 3-second rule. Turns out she had never been to a game. It was worse than taking the sisters to the county fair. After that, she skipped the games. I could tell she was listening, though. When I played, I could feel her there. On the other hand, maybe she was the reason the cheer squad was having a tougher year than usual. Emily was having a hard time staying on top of the Wildcats pyramid. but I didn't ask Lena about that. Today it was hard to pick out my teammates until you got close enough to see the hairy legs and facial hair. Link caught up to us. He looked worse up close. He had tried to put on makeup, smeared pink lipstick and all. He hitched up his skirt, tugging on the straining pantyhose underneath.
"You suck," he said, pointing at me across a row of cars. "Where's your costume?"
"I'm sorry, man, I forgot."
"Bull, you just didn't want to put all this crap on. I know you wait. You wussed out."
"I swear, I just forgot."
Lena smiled at Link. "I think you look great."
"I don't know how you girls wear all this junk all over your face. It itches like hell."
Lena made a face. She almost never wore makeup. She didn't have to. "You know, it's not like we all sign a contract with Maybelline when we turn 13. Link patted his wig and stuffed another sock down his sweater.
"Tell that to Savannah."
We walked up the front steps, and Boo was sitting on the lawn next to the flagpole. I almost asked how that dog could have possibly beaten us to school, but by now, I knew not to bother. The halls were packed. It looked like half the school had skipped first period. The rest of the basketball team was hanging out in front of Link's locker, also in drag, which was a big hit. Just not with me.
"Where are your pom-poms, wait?"
Emery shook one in my face.
"What's the matter? Those chicken legs of yours didn't look good in the skirt?"
Sean pulled on his sweater.
"I bet none of the girls on the squad would lend him a skirt."
A few of the guys laughed. Emery put his arm around me, leaning in toward me.
"Was that it, wait? Or is it Halloween every day when you're hooking up with a girl who lives in the haunted mansion?"
I grabbed him by the back of his sweater. One of the socks in his bra fell down to the floor.
"You want to do this now, Em?"
He shrugged.
"Your call. Bound to happen sooner or later."
Link stepped in between us.
"Ladies, ladies, we're here to cheer, and you don't want to mess up that pretty face, Em."
Earl shook his head, pushing Emery down the hall in front of him. As usual, he didn't say a word, but I knew the look. Once you go down that road, wait, there's no going back. It seemed like the basketball team was the talk of the school until I saw the real cheer squad. Turns out my teammates weren't the only ones who had come up with a group costume. Lena and I were on our way to English when we saw them.
"Holy crap."
Link hit my arm with the back of his hand.
"What?"
They were marching down the hall single file. Emily, Savannah, Eden, and Charlotte, followed by every member of the Jackson Wildcats cheerleading squad. They were dressed exactly alike, in ridiculously short black dresses, of course, pointy black boots, and tall, bent witches' hats. But that wasn't the worst part. Their long black wigs were curled into wild ringlets, and in black makeup, just below their right eyes, were painstakingly drawn, exaggerated crescent moons. Lena's unmistakable birthmark. To complete the effect, they were carrying brooms, pretending to frantically sweep around people's feet as they walked down the hall in procession.
"Witches on Halloween? How creative."
I squeezed her hand. Her expression didn't change, but I could feel her hand shaking.
"I'm sorry, Lena."
"If they only knew."
I waited for the building to start shaking, the windows to blow out, something. But nothing happened. Lena just stood there, seething. The future generation of the DAR headed toward us. I decided to meet them halfway.
"Where's your costume, Emily? Did you forget it was Halloween?"
Emily looked confused. Then she smiled at me, the sticky, sweet smile of someone a little too proud of herself.
"What are you talking about, Ethan? Isn't this what you're into now?" "We were just trying to make your girlfriend feel at home,"
Savannah said, smacking her gum. Lena shot me a look.
"Ethan, stop. You'll just make it worse for yourself."
"I don't care,"
I can handle this. What happens to you happens to me.
Link walked up beside me, yanking up his stockings.
Hey, girls. I thought we were coming as bitches.
Oh, wait, that's every day.
Lena smiled at Link in spite of herself.
You shut your mouth, Wesley Lincoln. I'm gonna tell your mama that you're hanging out with that freak, and she won't let you out of your house till Christmas.
You know what that thing on her face is, don't you?
Emily smirked, pointing from Lena's birthmark to the crescent she'd drawn on her cheek.
It's called a witch's mark.
Did you look that up online last night? You're an even bigger idiot than I thought.
I laughed.
You're the idiot. You're going out with her.
I was turning red, which was the last thing I wanted to do. This wasn't a conversation I wanted to have in front of the whole school, not to mention the fact that I had no idea if Lena and I were even going out. We had kissed once, and we were always together in one way or another, but she wasn't my girlfriend. At least I didn't think she was, even though I thought I'd heard her say that at the gathering. And what could I do? Ask? Maybe it was one of those things that if you had to ask, the answer was probably no. There was some part of her that still seemed to be holding back from me. A part of her I just couldn't reach. Emily jabbed me with the end of her broom. I could tell the whole stake in the heart concept would be attractive to her just about now.
Emily, why don't you all go jump out a window? See if you can fly. Or not.
Her eyes narrowed.
I hope you enjoy yourselves sitting around the house together tonight while the rest of the school is at Savannah's party. This will be the last holiday she spends at Jackson.
Emily spun around and marched back down the hall toward her locker, Savannah and their minions trailing behind her. Link was joking around with Lena, trying to cheer her up, which wasn't hard, considering how ridiculous he looked. Like I said, I could always count on Link.
They really hate me. It's never going to get old, is it?
Lena sighed. Link broke into a cheer, jumping around and waving his pom-poms.
They really hate you. Yes, they do. They hate everyone. How about you?
I'd be more worried if they liked you.
I leaned over and put my arm around her awkwardly, or tried to. She turned away, my hand barely brushing her shoulder.
Great. Not here. Why not? You're just making it worse for yourself. I'm a glutton for punishment.
Enough of the PDA,
Link elbowed me in the ribs.
You're gonna make me start feeling bad for myself, now that I've doomed myself to another year without a date. We're gonna be late for English, and I gotta take these pantyhose off on the way. I'm getting a serious wedgie.
I just have to stop at my locker and get my book, Lena said. Her hair began to curl around her shoulders. I was suspicious, but I didn't say anything. Emily, Savannah, Charlotte, and Eden were standing in front of their lockers, primping in front of the mirrors hanging inside the doors. Lena's locker was only a little farther down the hall.
Just ignore them, I said.
Emily was rubbing her cheek with a Kleenex. The black moon-shaped mark was only smearing bigger and blacker, not coming off at all.
Charlotte, do you have any makeup remover?
Sure.
Emily wiped her cheek a few more times.
This isn't coming off. Savannah, I thought you said this stuff came off with soap and water.
It does.
Then why isn't it coming off?
Emily slammed her locker door, annoyed. The drama got Link's attention.
What are those four doing over there?
Looks like they're having some kind of problem, Lena said, leaning against her locker. Savannah tried to wipe the black moon off her own cheek.
Mine isn't coming off either.
The moon was now smeared across half her face. Savannah started digging around in her purse.
I have the pencil right here.
Emily pulled her purse out of her locker, searching through it.
Forget it. I have mine in my bag.
What the?
Savannah pulled something out of her bag.
You used Sharpie?
Emily laughed.
Savannah held the marker up in front of her. Of course not. I have no idea how this got in here. You're so lame. That will never come off before the party tonight. I can't have this thing on my face all night. I'm going dressed as a Greek goddess, Aphrodite. This will completely ruin my costume.
You should have been more careful.
Emily dug around in her little silver purse some more. She dumped her purse on the ground under her locker, lip gloss and nail polish bottles rolling around on the floor.
It has to be here. What are you talking about?
Charlotte asked.
The makeup I used this morning, it's not here.
By now, Emily was attracting an audience. People were stopping to see what was going on. A Sharpie rolled out of Emily's purse into the middle of the hall.
You used Sharpie too? Of course I didn't!
Emily shrieked, rubbing her face frantically, but the black moon only grew bigger and blacker like the others.
What the hell is going on?
I know I have mine,
Charlotte said, turning the lock on her locker door. She opened the door and stood there for a few seconds, staring inside.
What is it?
Savannah demanded. Charlotte pulled her hand back out of her locker. She was holding a Sharpie. Link shook his pom-pom.
Cheerleaders rock!
I looked at Lena.
Sharpie?
A mischievous smile spread across her face.
I thought you said you couldn't control your powers. Beginner's luck.
By the end of the day, everyone at Jackson was talking about the cheer squad. Apparently, every one of the cheerleaders who dressed up as Lena had somehow used a Sharpie to draw the innocuous crescent moon on her face instead of eyeliner. Cheerleaders. The jokes were endless. All of them would be walking around school and the rest of town, singing in the church youth choirs and cheering at the games with Sharpie on their cheeks for the next few days until it faded away. Mrs. Lincoln and Mrs. Snow were going to have a fit.
I just wished I could be there to see it.
After school, I walked Lena back to her car, which was really just an excuse to try to hold her hand a little longer. The intense physical feelings I had when I touched her weren't the deterrent you might have expected. No matter what it felt like, whether I was burning or blowing out light bulbs or getting struck by lightning, I had to be close to her. It was like eating or breathing. I didn't have a choice. And that was scarier than a month of Halloweens. And it was killing me. What are you doing tonight? As she spoke, she pulled her hand absent-mindedly through her hair. She was sitting on the hood of the hearse, and I was standing in front of her.
I thought maybe you'd come over and we'd stay home and answer the door for trick-or-treaters. You can help me watch the lawn to make sure no one burns a cross on it.
I tried not to think too clearly about the rest of my plan, which involved Lena and our couch and old movies and Amma being gone for the night. I can't. It's a high holiday. I have relatives coming in from all over. Uncle M won't let me out of the house for 5 minutes.